The following is a duplicate of Tape 2, Side 1 of an interview conducted with Dr. Arthur Chung for the Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project.
Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is the tape 2 of the interview with Dr. Arthur Chung on October 23, 1979. Dr. Chung, did you mention that most Chinese at that time looked up upon the overseas Chinese students? Did they treat you very specially?
In China, you mean?
In China.
Yes. Well, in the beginning they did, because we were so different from them. Because in the first place we couldn't speak the language, and we dressed differently, and our actions and our lifestyle was quite different. So they looked upon us as typically overseas Chinese. And sometimes with some degree of, I wouldn't say, with some skepticism as to whether we would really stay for any length of time or not. Mm-hmm. They thought that, oh, you people, you'll be here just for a year or so, and then you'll be leaving. Mm-hmm. And so I felt differently, because I really liked the idea of staying in China and working and so forth. And I think the anti-Japanese war did a great deal toward that. That I felt that I could do something for China, because I could see very easily how the countryside, the way the people lived, the conditions that China was suffering under, and all that. And I think that was a very important factor. And then plus the student movement in 1935 and 36, and the you might say the progressive ideas that followed was something which also affected me quite profoundly even after I had left and trained in the United States. Because at the end of my training in 1949, actually I could have gone on if I wanted to, because my professor wanted me to stay. Mm-hmm. I was doing some very important work for him in the field of infantile diarrhea. And he wanted me to stay, and I could have stayed in the United States indefinitely if I wanted to. But at that time, my former wife she was born in China, and she still had a mother. Her father had died very early, and she wanted very much to return. And we had two children by that time, and she didn't want children to have their education in the United States. She wanted them to have an education in China. One was only 3, the other was 7. But we had left the United States in 1949 in September to return to China. So that's what we did. I had some mixed feelings at that time. I didn't know what it would be like. We knew that the communists had taken over a large part of China. But I think all of us were influenced to a certain extent by the reports that came from China concerning the Chinese communists. There were two schools of thought at that time, and there were two opposing schools of thought. Those who felt that the communists that was not Chinese at all, that they were cruel, that they were autocratic, and all that. And then there was the other school that felt that anything could be better than the government at that time, that the government was corrupt, that it was, inflation was running rife, and the people were dying from famine and from all that. And that anything could be better than the present government. And I was influenced more probably by the so-called progressive group, mm-hmm. those who were more sympathetic toward the communists mm-hmm. than others. And for that reason, I felt I had no compunction about returning to China at that time. I said, well, whatever government it is, I have had 8 years of training in the United States, that I could do something for my country, that I could contribute something in the way of health to my country. So I really considered China as my country. I didn't consider the United States as my country because I felt that I could do more and I could help China more by going back.
What did your parents' attitudes were?
Well, my parents, my father wanted me to stay, and I think my mother also, because they wanted me to be close to them. In fact, I had already taken my board examinations to practice in California, and I could practice if I wanted to. My father wanted me to practice in China, in Los Angeles. But I think another factor, a very strong factor, was my ex-wife, who was very insistent that we return to China. Mm-hmm. And to the final analysis, we decided to leave.
Did your parents ever think about going back to China?
No. My father had gone back several times. The last time he went back was just before I left in 1930. He went back in 1929 and 1930 and took my mother with her. This was her first trip to China. And she wasn't used to China at all because she was born in this country and brought up in this country. She felt that China was very primitive and all that. My father went back mainly to visit the village, as many old Chinese like to do, and to settle some affairs that they had at that time. And they stayed for about a year in China. Then they came back, and they never left after that.
Do you remember that your father ever invested in China, back in China?
You mean investments?
Yeah, investments.
Well, there were various investments of various kinds. There were always some people coming from China asking my father to invest in certain factories and certain schools, especially schools. I think the overseas Chinese in this country are approached most frequently by people who profess to open schools in the countryside, in the villages particularly. And I think because many overseas in this country themselves had never had much of an education, they were very anxious to have the villagers receive some sort of education, and so they contributed money. And I think that in many cases, this money really didn't get to the school at all, but it went to the pockets of those who asked for it. And I think the Chinese in this country may be quite naive in many cases. Because the idea sounded good to them, they felt that they wanted their people in the village to learn, to have some sort of education so they contribute. I think many of them were duped. My father was particularly that way. I mean, he would give money to many people who asked for it because they said they were going to set up a school or something, or a factory and so forth. But he never got anything from that. If anything, I think he lost more money that way than anything else. And as I say, he was always supporting the people in the villages. Mm-hmm. And I think that in a sense, it caused a certain amount of parasitism. I mean, people they became parasites. They would ask constantly for money in every letter that they would send to my father. My father would be so soft-hearted that he would send money to this relative and to that relative for this purpose or that purpose. And who knows what happened. I mean, in most cases, probably that money was spent for anything.
Did he make good in order to...
Well, my father was never a wealthy person.
But he can afford to spend...
Well, he could afford to spend some money. I mean, at that time, you see, the exchange rate was so favorable that remember that when I first went back, it was $1 to 4. Mm-hmm. And by the time I left, it was like 1 to 50 or something like that. It was very, And to send a dollar would be quite a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You need to send, say, $20, $30, $40, or $50 and quite a bit to the people in the villages, where things were much cheaper. So he did that. That was what he did all his life. And
you mentioned earlier that your grandfather was like kind of a landlord, and
yeah.
the brothers, they
yeah.
probably pretty well to do back in China.
Well, the thing is that they were relying on the rent that they collected from the tenants, and as long as the tenants paid the rent, well, they were leading a very easy life.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I heard from my brother just last week that of the 12 brothers,
mm-hmm.
almost half of them were smoking opium. I mean, that was very typical. I mean, when they got the money,
mm-hmm.
they would smoke opium.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true that the fact that one person was in the United States and was sending money back
mm-hmm.
supported a large number of people in the villages.
Mm-hmm.
And that may or may not be a good thing. Really created a sense of dependence, and of course, these people suffered a great deal during the communist revolution, because those were the objects of attack. I mean, the landlords were the ones who were eliminated.
Was that representing a prestige for the overseas Chinese sending money back to China?
Well, not so much a prestige, I think. Well, for those people who were in China. The fact that they had someone in the United States who was sending them money, I think that probably gave them a certain sense of prestige. If there was somebody here that was they had giving them sources of money, and that they didn't have to work for their living like the other farmers did. But as I say, I didn't think that was a very good thing for them.
Can we go back to when your childhood?
Yeah.
When you lived in hills, Nathan Hills, were
yeah.
there many Chinese around?
No.
So
there were no Chinese at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think my father selected that place mainly because he felt that he wanted to build his practice among the white people, among
nice.
The Caucasians. And, but he had his contacts with Chinatown, and he often went to China. To see his patients there,
mm-hmm.
and also to do shopping there too, for Chinese foods.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think his main purpose was to build up a practice among Americans,
mm-hmm.
because it was probably more profitable that way.
So did you play with the children, your neighbors, in the Caucasian?
Yes, there were some, I think, but I don't remember many.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, there was a certain amount of distance between. Chinese and the Americans and the white Americans. And as I say, even when I was in junior high school, I had very few, I don't recall a single occasion when I was invited to a house of an American or white family. All my the friends that I had were really the Chinese friends.
Did your family celebrate any Chinese holidays?
Oh yes, it was always my father. That's a characteristic, I think, of overseas Chinese families in the United States. So they are. I think that they follow the old customs and practices even more so than those in China itself,
mm-hmm.
because they feel that this is something that they can hold on to. That this is part of the Chinese culture that they cannot relinquish, and they also taught us. Those the same customs and things that they learned when they were children, because they wanted us to follow in their footsteps. And they didn't want us to lose any of the qualities of what a Chinese should be, according to their idea of what a Chinese should be. For example, we had a Chinese New Year's and the celebrations during the New Year's time and all that. But at the same time, we also celebrated some of the American holidays too, like Thanksgiving, Christmas. We also celebrated those too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the important things were still the Chinese holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So like in New Year's, do you go down Chinatown to celebrate with the Chinese?
Well, no. I think it was mainly, again, because we were living in uptown, but it's away from Chinatown. We didn't generally go there. I had an uncle that, it was my uncle, who used to take me to Chinatown to see the, during the celebrations and New Year's, the lion dance and the firecrackers and all that. And he used to take me there to see it. Mm-hmm. And that type of thing happened.
What did you do at home, though, if you don't...
Well, there was usually some sort of making of different kinds of things to eat, and the observance of the New Year's every year was about the same. For example, my father would give each of us some money in a little red package, that was followed throughout the whole course of the time we were here in the United States.
Would your father take days off during the New Year?
No, he would. If there were patients, he would still see them, because there were mostly white patients. Mm-hmm. And of course, among the Chinese, it was considered unlucky to be sick during the New Year's time, so they wouldn't call you even though they were sick. But my father had that the characteristic of a Chinese traditional doctor, that he would always respond when anybody called and asked for help, he would go and see them. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, he was quite well known in Los Angeles as a traditional doctor. And they liked to call him to
when you were young, you say earlier that you always feel more Chinese, but did you ever think about, be more American, or do you have any disagreement with your parents, when they want to be more Chinese and you say you want to be more Americanized?
Very occasionally. I don't think that there was much conflict along that line. There were some conflicts especially when we were in high school, when we were making friends, and my father was very anxious that I don't look, that I don't have Caucasian girlfriends. Mm-hmm. And he considered it as somewhat of an insult to me, that if I ever went out with an American girl, and he was extra cautious, as far as, not only to myself, but to my sister, and to my sister as well, but to be sure that if we did make friends, and we would make friends with Chinese rather than Caucasians. Mm-hmm. He was very, very strict. My whole impression of him as a child was that he was very strict. Mm-hmm. We felt rather uncomfortable in his presence. We were not free to talk about anything, about everything in front of him. On the other hand, we felt much freer to talk to my mother, because she seemed much more sympathetic, and she was not as stiff and not as formal as he was. I think that he represents a type of a passing generation, where the father is the head of the household, and all of that. I think that age has passed, but during those times it was quite normal to act that way.
What did you do for the recreation? Did you play Chinese music or?
No, nothing of that sort. I had a very poor time, because I had asthma ever since I was a young child, and my father was constantly afraid that I would get attacks. So he wouldn't let me take part in active sports, and I really couldn't. Mm-hmm. If I played basketball, I would get short of breath very quickly. So I was very poor in all kinds of sports. And the only thing I remember that I did most was reading. I read a great deal. In fact, I read so much that one time my mother said that she would take my books away to you, because I always borrowed books from the library and I would read and take them back to them. And these were the subject matter was mostly things that young kids were interested in. Nothing very serious reading, but always interested in knowing things and reading things. And I don't recall of any other recreation I've ever had.
So you probably...
No.
Did you ever play any kind of Chinese game, you know, children's game?
No, I don't think
because
we
have... Because you don't have
to. No, we don't have that. You see, also, I had no brothers, you see. Mm-hmm. And my sisters, well, they had their own groups, and the girls playing with girls. So we didn't have much... I did have a cousin that was the son of my uncle, my mother's brother, who was about my age. And he used to come over and we would play some games, we'd make kites and we'd fly kites. And then his father was very much interested in baseball, so he would sometimes take me to baseball games. My father didn't really quite approve of that. Mm-hmm. He felt that seeing a baseball game was a waste of time. Mm-hmm. But my cousin, he got it from his father, and I got it from him, because mm-hmm. we liked the idea of going to a baseball game and watching the players and all that. Mm-hmm. That was about the only recreation I remember that I ever had.
How about movies?
To a certain extent, yes. We like to see the movies.
American or Chinese?
American. We didn't understand the Chinese movies at that time. And my father occasionally took me to a Chinese play.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Cantonese play that was showing in Chinatown. Sometimes he would take us. But I felt bored because I didn't understand what was being played.
Mm-hmm.
And but I was more interested in movies, yes. I remember I had, in the Chinese class that we had,
mm-hmm.
there was a young boy, he was about 2 years younger. Sometimes we would make an arrangement to meet somewhere and see a show.
Mm-hmm.
My father would give me money to go with him. And we would go to one of the downtown theaters and see a movie. Things like that. So, but during my young life, I remember that it was rather... it wasn't a very full life that you would think that a child would have. First of all, because of the disability of my, and secondly, because of a very rather strict family.
Mm-hmm.
The family was a rather strict one.
Mm-hmm.
So we were at liberty to do anything we wanted.
Did your parents take you to Chinatown very often, or yourself?
Well, when I was very young, my mother's sister was still in Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to take me there to visit with my mother. Sometimes I would stay overnight at that place, and they'd come to me the next day. That was when I was very small. As I grew older, they moved out of Chinatown to San Diego. And then we would go to San Diego to visit them over the summers, and sometimes in the winters when we had vacation, we would go down there. And I had a cousin there who we used to play together. And in fact, we used to sell firecrackers during the 4th of July and sell Christmas trees during the Christmas season.
Mm-hmm.
And this cousin is still alive. He's a dentist now. I mean, he's still in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
But my uncle has died and my aunt has died.
Yeah. Did you eat all Chinese food at home? Your parents?
Entirely. We didn't. Except for lunch, we would have some American food, but we would always eat dinner that was cooked by my father and my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the ones who did the washing up and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We did our own laundry. We were quite independent. That was because we were not wealthy. We had to do everything ourselves. We did the cleaning of the house. We had the washing of our own clothes. We did all of that ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a source of surprise to many Chinese in China, because they had many of the college students were from wealthy families, and they would have servants and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, well, we did all of this ourselves. We never had servants to do it for us. So we were much more independent, I think, than the when I was in town. I could do a lot of things that they never did before in their lives.
So what would you think, you know, average income of the Chinese family in those days, or you probably...
Well, it's difficult to say. Labor at that time was quite cheap. I remember my brother, when he hired laborers to cut asparagus, only something like $70 to $100 a month. And that was very hard labor. They had to get up early in the morning, cut the asparagus, bend over, and of course, I never knew what my father's income was, because he was, as a practitioner, he received money from his patients. But there were times when it was very hard. As I say, well, during the Depression, it was very difficult. And we had hardly, sometimes at times, we had hardly any money to pay the rent. And then, because of his sympathy to the Chinese in the village, he would always send money. Mm-hmm. So we were always never very, very well off at any time. I think perhaps the best time of all was after I returned from China, mm-hmm. and we had moved to another house that he had bought. Mm-hmm. That was the first time he had bought a house. It was a house on Main Street. Mm-hmm. And it was a two-story house, and that was the older house, but it was the only house that he owned and bought himself. And that was the best time of all. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he did it. He probably accumulated the money. And that was the only property that he had. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever hear of any difficulty that, you know, to find a house in Maryland?
Well, yes. I think this part is very well known to all Chinese in this society. That at a time when we had to rent houses, we had a difficult time renting, because especially in the white districts, they don't want to rent to Chinese. And in some cases, they would have a sign for rent, but when we went up there, they would say, oh, this is already rented, or somebody has already asked about renting, and it's already taken. But we knew very well that probably wasn't the case. But it's true that at that time, the Chinese were not welcome in many of the American communities. So therefore, the only houses that we could rent were those that were rather poor condition, where the rent was cheap, and in a district that was not considered a very good district. And that's really is true. And that's not only our experience, but the experience of other Chinese at that period.
So when your parents moved in, you know, this white district to start a business, how did the neighbors treat them?
Well, I don't recall that we had much relations with the neighbors. You see, when my father bought this house, and I think this will probably be in the tapes too, I don't know how he got to know this person, a man named Holmes, who could speak Chinese. I don't know whether he learned Chinese as an interpreter or as a lawyer or whatever it was. But they got together, and he could speak Chinese, not too well, but I think understandable. And it was through the efforts of this man, Holmes, and my father, that my father was able to operate as he did in this store, in this herb company. And he stayed with us for quite a few years before he left. Now, why he left, I don't know. It may be revealed that in that, because I think my sister asked about Holmes,
uh-huh.
and what happened to him, and how it came about that he came.
Uh-huh.
But I think maybe that may have been a factor in the fact that he was able to rent this house mm-hmm. in the Holmes' name, in this American's name.
Uh-huh.
I remember that when we lived in that house, it was already a semi-business district.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see, Ninth and Hill, that's right in the this is, well, right now, of course, it's a dead business. In that, during those days, I think there are only one or two other houses along that street that are residences. Most of them are already office buildings. And there weren't many, I don't recall it, many playing with the neighbors there, or children around that area. And we kept to ourselves quite a lot, too, because I think my father felt that he didn't want us to be involved, and so he kept us to that home most of the time.
Did your parents treat you and your sister a little differently, like as a son or a daughter?
Well, I think, yes, I think in a sense that is true. I think that as with most old-fashioned families, the sons were treated with more deference than